The Business Buzz Podcast.
The Business Buzz with Mudiwa Mokshasibgabaza.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on VOFM. That's Voice of Wits. My name is Leo Mob Justice Kavaza and I'll be your host on today's show. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, for this week, some of the big news that has come out is obviously on the economics front, the budget speech where the Finance Minister Tito Mboweni came through to talk to us about how the year is going to be looking like in terms of the budget, and we're going to be having a conversation a little bit about that. But you know, some interesting things were is it going to be good for everyone, especially consumers? Yes, there's tax relief, but at the same time you have increases in levies such as on fuel and some of the sin taxes. So overall, how is it actually going to benefit us? That's one of the things we're definitely going to be touching on for today. But otherwise, it is the last week of the year that, not the year, sorry, ooh, look at me. It is the last week of the month, which means, as is our tradition on the Business Buzz, we get into, our brand new heavy episode. That's basically where we celebrate a young person in South Africa, 35 years and below, who is doing the thing in their industry. And for today, we're going to be, having a brand new heavy. That's going to be Sean Sanders, who is the CEO of Revix, that is a cryptocurrency company. Definitely make sure you tune in to our interview later on in the show, as he's going to be telling us about his journey and, his life in the industry and where he came from. If anyone listened to our previous episode about cryptocurrency, he was one of our guests, but for today, we'll be hearing, the man behind the business. Otherwise, you can keep in touch with us on Facebook. We are VOFM or Voice of Wits. You can find our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're hashtag BusinessBuzz, and our handle is at VOFM. You can also find us on wits.journalism.co.za for all our great content and our podcasts. On the other side of this, we are also going to be getting into the business wrap. That's the part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And today we're going to be talking to Vusi Maupa, who will give us some insight from National Treasury around the budget speech. So that's how the show is looking like. On the other side of this, we get into the business wrap.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the week's top trending business and economics news. And for this week, the big news of the week is obviously what happened with the budget speech. Finance Minister Tito Mboweni came on to tell us what's going on in terms of the country's budget. And this is following from the President's State of the Nation address a few weeks ago. So we're just getting some insight into what that is actually going to be like. But for today, we usually talk to Ken Lebo or Zanele, but we got someone from National Treasury. So I'm happy to say that we're joined by Vusi Maupa to give us some insight into what's actually happening out there. So Vusi, greetings to you.
Hey, Mudiwa, how are you?
No, doing all right on this end. I think, for our listeners out there, one of the big things is, just trying to understand what some of the big talking points were from Finance Minister Tito Mboweni's, budget speech. But more importantly, which aspects actually touch on the consumer?
Thanks a lot for the invitation, Mudiwa, and your host. It's quite an honor to be here, especially after such a very hectic week of trying to communicate or deliver such a difficult task and a difficult conditions, that is the budget 2021. So the message, I think, if we start to move from the context of just giving a bit of context of what is it that the budget was in fact trying to convey to the public in general and as well as the consumers included. So this budget around this time was framed on two considered policy objectives that we set out in the last year's MTBPS delivered in October 2020. And those objectives were promoting economic recovery and returning the public finances to sustainable position. We all know that the public finances have been misprojected in the previous budget. It's estimated to be very high in terms of the debt as a ratio of GDP. And certainly we know that, as presented by Minister Mboweni, that the COVID-19 shock is estimated to lead to a very significant decline in economic growth in the current year. But we've seen some improved global conditions and the easing of lockdowns that are giving a bit of hope and a cushion to our growth. And the months ahead, with the highly anticipated rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine, will support the full opening of the economy. So, in short, perhaps in brief, the 2021 budget really ensures that South Africa can manage the short-lived economic challenges, including the COVID-19 impact, as well as addressing the long-lasting structural challenges that you and I, the consumer at home, and all the public know of unemployment, including poverty and as well as inequality.
I think something that, listeners, especially those, you're buying bread, just going about your everyday life, might want to maybe get is on balance. On the one hand, we have increases in things like levies for fuel, but at the same time, there's increases. You've got increases in things like fuel levy and also sin taxes on cigarettes and things like that and alcohol. But at the same time, there's been a pullback in terms of, some of the tax relief that's been given, by government. So, on balance, where do South Africans stand? Is it more in terms of, costs are likely to rise, or more on the front that, they're likely to see that relief, touching them in their pockets?
That's a great question, Mudiwa. And look, just also to highlight that the government has, doesn't control the pricing in the market. Obviously, we make policy decisions that do directly or indirectly impact the markets. But what I can tell you now is, remember last year we did announce some tentative measures to increase revenue. I think we penciled in the budget about 40 billion for the next 4 years. So those measures, that's one, have been withdrawn. So that's a relief. To where it is, because if new tax measures, for example, would come into the personal income tax, they would be heavy. If they would come into CIT, this is consumer, the corporate income tax, they would be hitting much strain, especially under the certain conditions. So during the time of the budget, we didn't really highlight where it would come from, but after careful thought and consideration, we now not longer going to raise and have any tax policy measures that we announced of 40 billion. And of course, look, the personal income tax, the taxpayers will be better off with this 5% increase, so they will have much more lower tax to pay, especially with these brackets that have been introduced by SARS. And we do have, as you are rightly indicated, the increase in excise duties on alcohol and tobacco by 8%. Obviously, inflation-related increase of 15 cents per litre in general fuel levy and a higher inflation increase of 11 cents per litre in the road accident fund levy. This will come into effect on the 7th of April 2021. So, we will see increases in this day on the 7th of April in the cost of fuel. To your point again, how does it affect the consumer? The cost of fuel will is increased by these structural adjustments, we would have also, some factors that feed from the fuel levy that would also need to adjust accordingly. But we've seen, I'm not sure what the markets are saying, but we've seen some very strong rand against the US dollar that will also highly likely to cushion the impact of these structural changes in the short to medium term.
All right. And then in the last 30 seconds, for people that may not fully understand, because we talk about taxes, etc., is that the only, because I think because of COVID-19, people really wonder, how does government get its money? Is it all just coming from tax? Are we borrowing? Where do we stand on that front?
Yeah, just briefly, definitely one big consideration is to, whilst we are putting measures to spend on this COVID-19 to help the consumer and the public, We did not raise the taxes, that's one. But the significant portion of government money comes, as you say, from taxes. We're talking about 1.4 trillion that comes from taxes. That's 72.6%. Government borrows around 482 billion, and then there's some bit of non-tax revenue of about 1.7% of the total government revenue. So taxes certainly do contribute a lot into the government fiscal, and when the economy is not doing well, it certainly means that we won't have the resources or the revenues that we anticipated. But what we've done with this budget, instead of charging taxes, we looked at how do we reprioritize spending within existing baselines, as well as commit to spending on programs that are not long-lasting, so like the COVID relief packages, which are short-term by nature, and once we address some of the long-lasting issues that the country faces in the long term.
All right. We're certainly looking forward to engaging with Vusi again so that we can get some greater understanding. But that was Vusi Maupa, who is from National Treasury, giving us some insight into some, you know, the highlights of what was actually going on in and around the budget. He's also just highlighting some of the big points, the considerations they had to make in terms of balancing, you know, spending on COVID-19 versus giving, you know, some type of relief to consumers, you know, whilst at the same time trying to find ways of increasing the government's revenue. You heard there that a big portion comes from the taxes that you know, that we pay, about 70-72%, and then the rest is coming from things like you know, borrowing. He said around 400 or so billion rand is coming, is actually being borrowed you know, from the rest of the world, and also from domestic sources. You know, we hear about the bond market and things like that. I think for me, one of the most interesting parts about the budget speech was the fact that we were expecting to hear a little bit more detail just around what it means and what it takes to run some of our, you know, ailing state enterprises such as South African Airways and Eskom. And, you know, it was a glaring omission that wasn't there. And but, you know, if you look at the budget review, you actually see that there is a lot of money that's been given. An interesting one to leave out, and I'm sure that it's something that has been causing a lot of discussion around South Africa. On the other side of this, though, we do continue with our show. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. And as is our tradition here, every last week of every month, we like to celebrate a young person in South Africa, 35 years and below, who is doing the things in their industry. And for this month, we are happy to have someone who is no stranger to the Business Buzz. That is Sean Sanders, who is the founder and CEO of Revix. They are a company that's trying to help to make cryptocurrency more accessible to people, and you know, trying to make that trading a little bit you know, easier for the everyday person. And they're offering some innovative products around cryptocurrencies. If you heard our recent show around, you know, all the Bitcoin craze and Dogecoin and all of this recently, you would have caught Sean talking about, you know, what cryptocurrencies are, what they are not, how can people get into, you know, trading and all of that. And I would invite that if you didn't take a listen, you can head on over to the podcasting platforms on Iono FM. Look out for us on Apple Podcasts together with Spotify. Just type out the Business Buzz, and you will find, you know, that podcast is available online. Otherwise, you can engage with us on Facebook. We have our FM or Voice of Vits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So we're with Sean. Sean, greetings to you once again.
Hey, Madiwa. Yeah, very good. I'm great. Actually, you know, the crypto market's sort of been bouncing about the last while. And it's, oh, Bitcoin's pulled back a bit from its all-time high, which has, I guess, made a few investors a little sad. But I think this is a healthy correction. And, you know, with a market that's increased 6-7x since the time last year, it's sort of just a natural course. It's meant to happen this way, right? Of course, it never happens just in a vertical line. I'm good.
No. I think what you've just said is an excellent place for us to start to say, how does a young South African actually get interested in issues of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies? Like, what were you reading when you were growing up? Like, you know, did you have a social life? You know, all of these things. Yeah. And also, where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I am from Johannesburg initially. I then saw the greener pastures. When I turned 18, I moved down to Cape Town to study at the University of Cape Town. I went to St. Stephen's Boys in Sandton, or Sandton-Randburg area. So I finished my high schooling there, and then, yeah, like I said, came down to Cape Town, studied a Bachelor of Business Science in Finance. I did my Honours in Finance. I was fortunate enough to be awarded magna cum laude for my degree, and that was because I was a little bit infatuated. So I'm a finance geek. I really enjoy the financial markets. I really enjoy investing. And I was actually really fortunate, I suppose, in my second year of university, I got picked up by a modeling agency in Cape Town. They were looking for really fit and strong guys. And I landed up wanting to be a professional rugby player while being a bit of a finance geek. And I sort of fit into the mold of, you know, this mental health kind of guy. So, boy next door, happy smile, whatever you want to call it. Got pulled into the modeling ring. And this is a very interesting story to get into crypto. But I got pulled into the modeling ring. Next second, I was traveling across the world while studying. And I landed up meeting a bunch of models. And I'm talking now, you know, I'm 20, 21. And I landed up meeting a whole bunch of models that are earning a lot of money on a daily basis. And I'm talking, you know, a couple thousand euros every single day. And they're busy flying around the world. And the thing is, they leave their money. And I mean, obviously, this is not all models. I'm stereotyping. But the models that I was meeting, they were leaving their money at the modeling agencies. So that means that a model would arrive in Milan or arrive in Barcelona or arrive in Madrid or whatever the story is, and a modeling agency would either give them a prepaid card with some cash on it, or alternatively give them a big wad of money and say, like, this is the money that you earned the last time you were here. And the modeling agency was effectively acting as a bank. And I thought this was insane. I thought, you know, you should rather be investing this money, and this is back when interest rates in developed markets were actually at a reasonable level and you could earn a return. So I said to them, no, this is insane. Like, let me assist you with managing your money. Remember, 21, 20, 21 years old. So it's a bit, like, I look back now and I laugh at myself. But anyway, so landed up actually managing some of these models' money. And I'm, in a very short space of time, actually, the amount of money I was managing went to over 20 million rand. At that point in time, it was about $1.8 million. Now, this is this 20, 21-year-old guy that was managing all this money. And you know, this is something that I didn't want to tell my parents because they would have completely, you know, they're both financiers in their own right. My dad's an accountant. My mom works at RMB. And they would have completely slapped me. So I kind of hid it from them for a while until the day came when one of the models that I was investing for decided, well, she wants to buy a house in London. And I had invested in South Africa. And I realized, oh, gosh, like, you know, I need to be able to move this money to London. And I had no idea how to move this money, right? And as a South African as well, you know, you obviously face exchange control issues, you know, so you can apply to that capital exemption, right? And you can move more than X amount of money. So you can move more than 1 million rand, but less than 10 million rand out of the country. And I went through this entire process. I was like, this is incredibly inefficient, right? It's a painful process to go through. Is there not another way that I can move this money that's a little bit more efficient and that doesn't cost, you know, 3 or 4%? When you move 1 million rand and it costs you 3 to 4% to move that money, I mean, in some cases, people are paying, you know, 7%. But when you're paying, you know, those sort of percentages, you're talking 30,000 rand, 40,000 rand, 70,000 rand. That's an insane amount of money just to move a money offshore, right? And that's where I came about, you know, after doing a bit of research online, this weird and wonderful concept of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And now this was really in the early days. And that was the first time I ever experimented with crypto. We landed up moving the money offshore initially, moving it to a London-based bank account at that point in time. It was really complicated then to buy cryptocurrency. And finally bought my first Bitcoin. Had Bitcoin for maybe about 2.5 hours as I moved it across to the U.S., sold it off on an exchange over there, and ended up returning the money to the model. And I never thought of anything after that, right? So I was like, oh, that was quite interesting. I didn't really understand how blockchains worked. But I was like, wow, that was, you know, pretty efficient. Fortunately, you know, the price didn't change all that much. I actually ended up making a little bit of money out of the transaction, and I was done. And I didn't think of crypto again until, you know, early 2016 when I got interested in it again. And, you know, I was working for a family office in the United Kingdom. So a family office is really where somebody has a load of money. You know, they need to hire their own lawyer, their own analyst, their own financial team to be able to manage their investments. And I was working at that company, and I was meeting a lot of high net worth individuals. And I was in a very fortunate position where I was infatuated with alternative assets. So alternative assets are pretty much anything that aren't stocks and bonds. So if you're looking at property, if you're looking at, you know, even buying weird and wonderful things like baseball cards, sneakers, fine wines, or plastic cars, cryptocurrencies fall into that. And I'm kind of infatuated with this market. I guess startups as well, like actually investing in startups falls into this category as well. And I ended up speaking to a whole bunch of high net worth individuals who wanted to get exposure to these areas and just had absolutely no clue how. So I formed my second company, and it was called Satire. Satire was a proprietary trading firm where essentially you can buy and sell these different assets. And I started working with some high net worth individuals, and it was pretty much no time whatsoever that the questions of crypto kept coming up. You know, what is Bitcoin? And at that point in time, I was like, I don't know what Bitcoin is. It's magic internet money. Fast forward a few years, and you look at what we have today, and there's Revex, right? So, I mean, I kind of missed out a very big part of that story. But from working at Satire there, it just became very apparent to me that there was a need amongst high net worth individuals, which are generally sort of early adopters in the alternative investment space, that they wanted access to digital currency. They wanted access to cryptocurrency. At that point in time, it was just, you know, not an easy way to get exposure to crypto. And there certainly wasn't a responsible way to get exposure to crypto. Because if you look at cryptocurrencies as an asset class, you've got Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are the two biggest cryptocurrencies, and they make up about 74% of the entire cryptocurrency market. So there are people who go out and they buy only Bitcoin or they buy only Ethereum, and that's like going out and buying a single stock, which is a bit ridiculous, right? You wouldn't go out and just buy NASDAQ stock or just buy Woolworths stock or just buy Shopify. You would generally buy a diversified basket of stocks. And I thought this was bizarre that the same principle wasn't being applied to the crypto market. And that then led to the creation of Revex, where we said, well, there's a problem here. You know, people are not investing in this asset class the same as what they're doing in other asset classes. Diversification is the only free lunch when it comes to investing. You'll hear people talk about diversification again and again and again. You know, why are people not applying this to the crypto space? And yeah, that was sort of the premise of why we started Revex, was to say, you can invest in a diversified basket of cryptocurrencies for a very low fee. And it, yeah, ultimately is a more responsible way to go about investing in this asset class. And that's how we started Revex. And now Revex has sort of evolved into a fairly big business. And, you know, we're expanding now into the UK, we're expanding into the EU, which is all super exciting. So yeah, I think that's a bit of background on me and sort of where we came from.
That's actually quite an incredible story, especially that tie-up between, you know, being in university, having ambitions to become a rugby player, then getting into modeling, traveling around the world, realizing that your comrades are earning all this money that they're just leaving with the agencies that they could actually be growing, being 21 years old and having nearly 2 million is it euros or dollars that you're managing, and then, you know, using Bitcoin to sort of go counter to the normal repatriation systems that people have, and then actually, you know, it's an amazing story. And in all this, right, you touched on your parents a little bit. How has that relationship been? I guess my question is more, because we're a business show, one of the things we like asking business people or people that are in business or entrepreneurs is, you know, what type of relationship did you have with money growing up? Like, what were your parents or your family saying about money? Did they encourage business? Did they say, stay away from going your own way, you know, be a doctor, lawyer, accountant? What were you being told?
No, my parents encouraged me. I don't think they actually needed to encourage me all that much, because I was quite a little entrepreneur growing up. When I was 11 years old, I was selling skateboard stickers to guys in my grade. I made, I think, 10,000 rand. I think that was the amount, really, just selling these skateboard stickers. And the thing is that I was kind of asking my parents for, like, you know, printer ink, paper, and all the different materials that I needed, not having any cost of goods sold, any, like, overhead costs, and then being able to only make profit. So, like, everything that you make just goes straight to your bottom line. So that was fantastic. I then got involved with, my word, I sold supplements in high school just as, like, another side hustle. I was like, well, I can import these supplements from the U.S. and sell them to guys in my school at a significant markup. It was like a brilliant opportunity. And then there was a host of other small businesses. But my dad's an entrepreneur. I mean, he started his own accountancy firm. And he started a few different businesses. So he was, you know, air commerce, a hustler. My mom was kind of the opposite. My mom worked at F&B, and then she moved over to R&B in the project management side of things. And, you know, she worked like you've never seen somebody work this hard in your entire life. Both my parents are role models, but my parents were honestly phenomenal. Right? I think I'm a little scared to have kids because there's no way I'm going to be able to compare myself to their parents. Right? So it's something I'm very grateful for. But I think in terms of just the way that they pushed me, I mean, it was from an academic standpoint, they pushed me hard. From a sports standpoint, they pushed me hard. But it was also, you know, just making sure that you have discipline, because that's the other thing as an entrepreneur, right? It's so easy to throw in the towel at any point throughout the journey. Being able to stick it out, having grit, you kind of develop that in other areas of your life, right? You don't just start a business and then get grit. You develop that from sports. You develop that for, like, you know, studying through uni and really going through those years for, like, getting through high school, you know, going through the emotional roller coaster that everybody goes through at some point in their life and coming out the other side being a more mature individual. And having your parents as a support structure, or even just having friends as a support structure, is so critical. And I mean, I can tell you the last 2 years, I mean, this year has really been a good start to the year for Revix. I mean, we have pretty much doubled our headcount. We're moving into a bigger office. I'm pinching myself every single morning just about how we are growing. This is my dream come true. But I owe a very big portion of my success to my parents, because the last 2 years, you know, this is the sort of the period that you don't see when you see entrepreneur story, right? You don't see the struggle. You don't see the exceptionally long days, the nights by yourself in the office, the despair, the complete hopelessness that you feel when you're like, oh, my word, I've spent the last 2 years building something and, you know, it's not producing the results that we want. And then you've got the opposite side of that, right, which is when you raise capital. So we recently raised a fair amount of money that'll be hopefully announced to the market pretty soon. And there's nothing that I can say is a better feeling in my entire life than going through this experience. It's been a huge slog trying to get to this position. But in raising capital, it literally feels like, you know, you've just taken every happy pull in the entire world and you've taken morphine, you're the happiest human. And that's sort of, you know, the position where we as a company are in right now, where we're growing quickly, operations are working nicely, everyone's getting along with everyone. I mean, obviously this it won't stay like this forever. But it is kind of that surreal moment where as an entrepreneur, you live for these moments.
That's, you know, brilliant in terms of that support structure from the parents. Before we go to a break, though, what type of people do you keep, you know, around you now? You know, you've already told us the important role that your parents have kept. Are there any siblings or is it friends? Like, how, you know, how do you keep yourself sane outside of, you know, keeping an eye on the crypto markets?
Yeah, so I think there's this saying that says that you are the average of the five people you spend your time with. And I like to challenge things. That's like the personality that I am. And I think that's a sort of silly approach. Like, don't get me wrong, you want to be with remarkable people. Like, you need remarkable people in your life. But you also need remarkable people that are just really good people. Like, people that you can trust, people that you can confide in, people that are just remarkable in a very specific way. So people immediately want to go for, like, a successful individual and define success as being maybe wealthy or, I don't know, having a business or having a lifestyle that they would want, but they're not really looking for perhaps the characteristics that you actually need in that person or that person can actually offer you. So I've got a handful of friends in my life. I've got a sister who I'm very close to. She's based in the UK. She makes me look like the black sheep of the family. She's incredibly smart. But my friends, especially, you know, my close friends in Cape Town, my friends that are abroad, we keep in close contact with each other. Sometimes you actually don't chat for a long period of time, but you sort of know that person inside and out. So when you see them again, or you chat with them again, or you need to confide in them, or they need to confide in you, you know, it's like nothing's changed, and you really know that person. So I feel like those close friendships are critical. For me, they're absolutely everything. The journey as an entrepreneur is a very challenging one. It's an incredibly, incredibly challenging one. And those people sort of make the entire journey worthwhile. And it actually doesn't matter if you're going down the entrepreneurial route, or if you're starting your own business, or starting your own, side gig, side hustle, or whether it be you working, you know, for another company or something and wanting to start a business down the road, you need those people. I think it's so, so critical. So you got to sort of nurture those relationships a lot more.
Okay. So that's been us. We are talking to Sean Sanders, who is the CEO and the founder of Revix. They are a cryptocurrency company. He is our brand new heavy for the month, giving us some insight into what actually got him started in the crypto markets, journey from, you know, serial entrepreneur doing skateboard stickers from back in the day, you know, all the way to wanting to become a rugby player, into being a model, managing money, and now running a crypto firm. On the other side of this, we continue with the show. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
COVID Biz Watch. COVID Biz Watch. On the Business Buzz.
For today in our COVID business watch, this is when we look at the impact of COVID-19 on various businesses in and around South Africa. And for today, our producer Ntando went and spoke to Tsolofelo Mweketsane, who is the operator of a kitchen that's called Tsolo _M. We asked her a number of different questions, you know, about, you know, launching the business during COVID-19, what was her inspiration, and then in what way the lockdown has actually forced her to think outside the box when it comes to operating the business, and some of the lessons that she has learned, and you know, what advice she has for fellow entrepreneurs. Here's what she had to say.
Hi, my name is Tsolofelo, a young woman from Soweto. I have a kitchen which I have named after myself called Tsolo M, for which I'm working towards it being a brand that is on everyone's lips. Now, I launched my business in the midst of a pandemic. So what exactly inspired me, you would ask yourself. It has to be my son, of course. He's always motivation towards everything that I do. I lost my job due to COVID, and I thought to myself, where am I going to get a job at this time when so many businesses are shutting down? It seemed impossible, honestly. Now, this is where I had to go back to the drawing board and check for a plan B. I've got a son that I need to take care of. I'm a single parent at that, and I also need to take care of myself. And no one is going to save me. And this is where I had to think of what I was good at and use it to survive. In this case, it definitely had to be cooking. Now, firstly, I don't have a restaurant and we're within a pandemic. So now I had to think of how is this going to work to work without it affecting my family. You know, I had to think outside of the box. I thought to myself, strictly takeaways and deliveries. Now, I use my mom's old car for this, or she will kill me if she heard me, but I use my mom's old car for business, and it's really been helpful. Now, no one sits in, so we are avoiding the whole social gathering situation. It's literally a pay-and-go type of situation. You call in, you place an order, you collect and go, or you have it be delivered to you. Now, I think I've always loved cooking, but during the lockdown level 5, I found myself just trying out a variety of dishes. I've got over 500 recipes saved on my phone, for which I challenged myself to try on a daily basis. My family became my judges during that time, and although they wouldn't admit it, they really did enjoy the numerous dishes. I'd also post these on social media, and I'd have my friends and followers asking, why am I not starting something for myself, because I'm good at it. Now, this absolutely inspired my creativity. Now, business is not easy. I won't lie to you. When I started, I didn't even know what I was doing, honestly. I know nothing about business besides what I learned while I was studying for my degree, one that I'm hoping this business will help me complete, because I had to drop out due to financial constraints. Now, in business, you need to be patient. You need to be in control. You need to know that the customer comes before the profit. But mostly, you need to be willing to learn along the way. I'm working towards building a brand that will create employment, given the dire situation of the high employment rates in our country. And anyone is welcome to support this dream, of course, with contributions or donations to finance the business, because I've faced challenges of having to let, you know, some gigs go, some business go, because I don't have equipment and no sufficient funding in this case. Now, these are the challenges that you face in business, but what you don't do is give up. You know, you always soldier on, because there is something, you know, that one thing that always motivates you, it will keep you going. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
The Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are with our brand new heavy, Sean. And before the break, he was giving us the what we call the foundational story, you know, just his journey over the years, where he started, where he's going, and the people that he keeps around him. I want to continue with the theme, Sean, around people, you know, because you said that at the moment you're growing your team and all of this stuff. You know,
How has that part of the journey been? Because, you know, one of the things for a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, is letting go, because it's like a baby, and then letting go of control of certain parts of your business and actually delegating it out, to other individuals, whether they're smarter than you, whatever it is. Like, how have you gone about that? How do you think about it?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, that's not an easy thing for me, and it hasn't been an easy thing for me to do. So I can tell you that we've hired very, and I can't say it's me that's hired everyone. You know, we as a company have selected very smart people to join us in particular roles. And it's quite phenomenal when you do bring somebody else on board, whether that is a software developer, whether that's a designer, whether that's a marketer, they come on board and they just make you feel so stuck. Right, about like how you think you were doing things before. That's the best feeling in the entire world as an entrepreneur, because you realize, oh gosh, there's somebody into this business that's able to sort of improve that function so much more than what I was able to do it. And as an entrepreneur, your job really, and certainly in our stage of the business, is to find phenomenal people for phenomenal roles and, you know, really give them what they need to succeed in that role. And I can tell you, you know, finding the right talent is really difficult. It's even more difficult to have found the wrong talent and then have to let them go. And that's a painful process that we've had to, unfortunately, go through a few times at Revix, because, you know, we do want to operate as a high-performance team, which is, I think, very similar to, you know, the way Man United or Chelsea operates, where you look at bringing together the best people and you think that they're going to gel really well together. But if somebody doesn't work, you sort of have to let them go and bring somebody else in so that team can continue to perform. So, I mean, people are so, so, so critical. I can't begin to tell you that. I mean, I think I write down every day what I'm grateful for. There's one point a day that I write down what I'm grateful for, and I can tell you this year alone, there must have been a good 20 days, and look, we're only 55 odd days into the year, but I can tell you there's been about 20 days when I'm saying I'm grateful for my team, because we've seen, you know, insane customer growth. We've seen a whole host of little bugs creep up, whether that be, you know, a login error, or maybe, like, you know, when we're executing a trade, the platform that we're using, they're just not operational, so we're having to, like, you know, work around that. And our guys and girls on the team have just stepped up. You know, they've worked incredibly long hours. They've worked over weekends. They've just had the do what it takes mentality. And, you know, as a founder, you can't ask for anything more than that. So, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for the team that I'm. And to anybody else that's listening, you know, if you're wanting to build a business, I'm telling you, start meeting people that you think are remarkable, meet phenomenal individuals, and hire for competence. Don't just hire for a particular role. Generally speaking, early in a startup, you're going to be wearing so many different hats that you just need people that are really smart in general, and that can apply that intelligence to different areas. So hopefully that's a bit of assistance there.
And how many people do you have now? And in terms of gaining skills, what's the makeup of your team? Are it developers, salespeople, traders? Like, how is the business made up?
Yeah, so currently we are 16 people at Revix. We have grown from about 9 at the start of the year, and we'll probably continue to grow to about 22 people before the end of June, which is a bit petrifying when you have payroll every month. But at the same time, it's a dream come true, as I said. In terms of the makeup of the team, so to date, you know, we are fintech, right? Financial technology company. Now, I've decided that it makes more sense for Revix to grow more as a tech company than a finance company. So until about June this year, we will have about 2 times the number of developers, software developers, that is, than finance-oriented individuals within Revix. So at the moment, you're kind of looking at about a 70% split between software developers and everyone else. And the software developers are everyone from, you know, roles from front-end development, data scientists, back-end developers, security experts, product owners, product managers. And on the other side of the spectrum, you've got, you know, our marketers, our product designers. But to a certain degree, we've got sales individuals, but the sales for us is a lot more, you know, you've got a B2B business, which is a lot more sales focused, and then a B2C business, which is a lot more marketing focused. And because we're a lot more of a B2C model, we have a lot more marketing than sales. But I must say, you know, over the last while, the number of institutions or, you know, funds, yes, just high net worth individuals that are interested in getting involved in crypto has meant that we've started to look at our sales arm as well. So that's something we're going to be building on over time.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. And one of the things, because it sounds like you've You know, like you said, you've had the entrepreneurial bug for a number of years, and you detailed the story before the break about, you know, starting to manage people's money and then getting into, I guess, starting your second company, you said, back in 2016 and all of that. Where are those businesses? Have they been sold off? Did you shut them down? Yeah.
So the first business I started, now this is not looking at like we call them huge high school sort of university like businesses. The first proper business that we started with my best friend and I at that point in time, we wanted to introduce a university application system. We called it Application Portal that allowed you to apply for a multitude of universities through a single online portal and also be shown bursary, scholarship opportunities, you name it, right? So there's currently nothing like that in South Africa. If you want to apply to FITS, UCT, Stellenbosch, you actually have to individually apply to each of these universities, which is incredibly painful. The other thing is there's so many scholarship and bursary opportunities that are missed because people just don't know about them. So, you know, why not just aggregate all of that onto a single platform? And so that was the first thing that we did. We spent a fair amount of money and time building that. That was in my third year of university. We got to a government tender, and this was the first time I ever learned about how difficult it is dealing with government. So we did not win the tender. We lost the tender, and unless you've got buy-in from every university in South Africa, you're just not going to be able to launch that product in this country. So we put it on ice. We said, well, listen, Brazil doesn't have that sort of system in place. India doesn't have that system in place. Those are big markets. You know, let's finish our studies, and then we can come back to look at whether we want to launch this. As a 22, 23-year-old guy, we got interested in something else. So my best friend at that point in time went off to study law in the United Kingdom. I then went off and I started working in the world of finance, and I got kind of carried away with that. Then I mentioned I started that Sire proprietary trading firm. That firm landed up just being self-funded. It's an investment firm, so naturally, once you've made investments, you sort of just wait to make the returns. It was something that I kept going until I started Revex. When we started Revex, I decided, you know, I'm not going to be focusing on different businesses. I owe it to the investors to be focusing on a single business. So I landed up just closing that business down. Then there was another company called Blocktree Capital that I started, and that was an advisory service in the crypto space. So again, dealing with high net worth individuals that want to invest $1 or $2 million into Bitcoin or one of the different cryptocurrency baskets that exist out there that we offer. You know, at that point in time, there wasn't a service like what we offer. We say, listen, come to our platform, sign up for free, and then invest in one of the bundles. There was, you know, if you want to get diversified exposure to crypto, somebody has to build that for you. And we were offering that to customers. And it was good for us. I mean, while we were running it, it was fantastic. But it made me realize that I wanted something that was more scalable, something where people could essentially, you know, manage their money themselves. And that's where Revex, I think, really the idea of what we were looking to do. And Revex, it stands for Revolutionary Index or Revolutionary Investment. And the idea around what we're trying to bring to the market is that I truly believe that everyday people should become their own wealth managers. You shouldn't be relying on third-party fund managers. Maybe this is because I come from the world of finance, where I have a bit of an issue with wealth managers taking fees for pretty much doing nothing on a yearly basis. So from my perspective, if we can, you know, say to people, listen, you should be managing money just in the same way you should be managing your health. You don't go to a doctor and say, how do I be more healthy, right? You go to a doctor when you're sick. It's like too late. And it's the same as with, you know, financial management. You need the sort of right framework, but you don't need to be going to a third party always to deal with your money, right? So by enabling people to sort of manage their own money, we want to empower people then to become wealthy and sort of achieve their dreams in that way. And that became a really strong mission. And it became something where I was like, okay, right, how can we actually make an impact on people's lives? You know, currently one of the greatest wealth generating opportunities, and if you look at any millionaire or billionaire, you know, 9 times out of 10, they come from a history of making good investments, right? They'll invest in something, they'll hold it for a long period of time, and they'll be able to sell it and obviously reap the rewards from that. And that's 9 times out of 10 how they made their money. And I just think that same principle should be applied to so many different people that exist out there, and it's just not being applied. Rewind 25 years, people weren't able to invest in themselves, right? You had to call a broker. The broker would trade for you, and that was kind of just the way it worked. So today, you've got this huge opportunity to sort of, you know, manage your own money, to grow your own money, to become really financially savvy. But for some reason, it's just taking a lot longer to get there. So our job is to really accelerate that process. And so I think I've completely, you know, gone off the topic there on a bit of a side rant. But yeah, hopefully, you know, that does kind of get to what we were talking about as well.
Yeah, because I think one of the things I was then curious about is because It's once again comes back to this issue of, you know, people, because there's some people that are with you over a long time, there's some people that are with you for a season, etc. And the teams that people have around them, it's always very important. So when you start, you know, one business and you move to another and another and another, you know, in the world of technology, we talk about the PayPal mafia. You know, how all of these guys that worked at one company called PayPal went on to start some of the most revolutionary companies, from Tesla all the way to YouTube, etc. You know, so I guess, you know, that's where the curiosity with people came in, because I was then going to ask, you know, if there's anyone who's still with you, you know, now, or have you sort of been, you know, having finding yourselves in different stages?
Yeah, so I really view business and life, I mean, it's not the same for everyone, so I respect that as well, but business and life for me are one and the same, right? So, like, I will happily start a business with a friend of mine, as long as we outline the terms and we're both on exactly the same page. It kind of forces you to have good communication. And don't get me wrong, I know that ends in tears for a lot of people, but I think if you go in there with the right intention and you understand what you're getting into and you make it very, very obvious that that's, you know, an issue that potentially could creep up, I think it becomes quite an interesting opportunity, because those are people you trust, right? I mean, going into business with family has its benefits as well as its downsides, which I think is quite interesting. Another opportunity, I think, as a founder or as an entrepreneur, is that you get the opportunity to meet and speak with really incredible people. So, like, Madiwa, I think, you know, in 5 or 6 years, who knows, maybe before then, you'll become, you know, a big voice in South Africa. I mean, you're really a big presence, but you'll become a bigger presence going forward. And those sort of relationships over time, you know, they grow, and, you know, you end up then having a beer over a weekend or something like that, right? And then that network that you've built then feeds into my network. And that then kind of just, you know, you get introduced to somebody else and it just accelerates the entire process. And I think that opportunity is something that a lot of people miss out when they just go into a 9-to-5 and they meet the people that they're working with, but they never land up sort of jumping into the networks where you've got exponential value. And I think that's a big opportunity that people should just explore. I mean, I've had many failed businesses. You know, I don't even know if I can call them really failures. It's more just businesses where I learned a lot, and then I went on to something else that I was more interested in. And that's really just what life's about, right? Like, you do something that you enjoy until you don't, and you move on to something else, and you do that until you enjoy. Like, you know, work at the end of the day is a means to an end. That end is, like, you know, having a good time, and hopefully making money having a good time. Like, that's the ultimate sort of, you know, win at the end of the day. And I think, you know, meeting great people, working with great people, working with smart people, that's what this game is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this I've really been enjoying this conversation, and especially, you know, all of the nuggets that you are throwing in our direction. But as we, you know, round up, there's a couple of questions that we tend to ask all of our brand new heavy. The first one is on knowledge accumulation, because entrepreneurs need to, whether you're talking to people, mentors, whatever it is, you need to gain that knowledge. So what are you reading at the moment?
Oof, what am I reading? I'm reading like 4 different books at the moment. Atomic Habits was something that I recently
brilliant read. Book.
Something that I would recommend. Yeah, a fantastic book. The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek is another phenomenal book. So I've quickly gone a little rant about this. So, you know, you've got finite and infinite games. Finite game really has known players, a known time period, and it has defined rules, right? Football would be a defined game. Then you've got the infinite game, which is life, right? You've got unknown players, the rules change, the objective changes, and you have to adapt, and you have to constantly be pivoting. And I think that's a phenomenal book to read, especially when you're going through a period of transition, because you just realize, like, you have to just roll with the punches. You have to just roll with whatever happens in life. So that's definitely something I would recommend. Something else I would recommend, and maybe this is for the finance geeks out there, is Radical Markets. Radical Markets, you know, for the times that we are now, it's a phenomenal book. So, yeah, and I'm trying to think about, the last one is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. The story of the Nike founder. Top book. Honestly, top book I've read in the last 2 years. I'd really recommend going out there. And, you know, the audiobook's also brilliant. So that's part of the top of my reading.
Okay. I think out of the 4 you've just mentioned, I'm happy to say that I know the one. I've heard about the Phil Knight book, and I've gone through the James Clear book on Atomic Habits. That's a brilliant one. Definitely going to look for the other two. You know, I think, you know, we need to get a culture of reading, you know, more in young people. Whether you're going to consume the book by actually reading through it or audiobooks, whatever it is, we just need to increase that culture. And then lastly, you know, as is our tradition, as a brand new heavy, what do you want your legacy to be?
I'm going to take, I think, a stance here that I don't think a lot of other entrepreneurs are going to say on the show. So I'm a nihilist, right? I truly believe that there isn't much point to life, right? And I mean that from a very positive place, and that sounds weird to say. But I feel that, you know, I'm an atheist, I'm a nihilist, and like everyone's probably listening to this going like, oh my God, why are you building a business? Or why are you building a business? Then go, oh, sit on the couch and feel sorry for yourself. But I think that makes things really interesting for me and really cool, because like the beauty in life for me is really just, you know, what I decide to make it. And for me, like, life is amazing because you get to say, right, I want to do something. And then you go out there and you get this like little biological rush really when you accomplish that. And I absolutely love that about the way that I can approach problems. I'm completely obsessive as well. So when I dive into something, I really get carried away. And you know, I encourage that. I battle actually with people that don't go full out to something. People that say, like, listen, you need work-life balance, you know, great, and, you know, I appreciate that that's what some people need. But for me, I'm like, no, it's like, you know, there's a life balance. Like, you just need to go out and go completely crazy for what you do. So my legacy, what do I want to leave? I'm not actually too fazed about leaving anything behind. I want to give my family, you know, this like the sort of support and love that they've given me. I perhaps have a child one day, and I'm able to sort of be off the sort of person that my parents have been to me. And then I think I just want to be able to empower a lot of people through Revix itself, so people that actually work at Revix, to be able to, you know, move up in their careers, achieve their own dreams, and feel just, I think, as excited and passionate as I do. And then on the other side of things is the customers that we actually serve from Revix is to actually fulfill our mission. Like, it's one thing for a company to have a nice mission statement on the wall. It's a completely different thing for that mission statement actually to impact millions of people's lives, if not billions. And our big audacious goal really with Revix is to enable more than a million people to have the ability to manage their own money. And you can just bring that money out of the fund management game into your own hands, and you know, you can then start managing money. I think that can have a really big impact. That's what my legacy.
Brilliant. I really like that. And you're right. You are the only person who's ever answered. I've been doing this for a number of years now. You're the only person who's answered that question in that way. But yeah, I really appreciate your perspective. So that's been us, Sean Sanders, Revix. Insights into, you know, his life, insights into the business, you know, an important discussion just around, you know, the people that you surround yourself with. And I like one of the things that he was talking about, to say that networks are important. You need to nurture, you know, the some of those relationships. You know, clear and honest communication between people, very important. We often hear that people, you know, should not go into business with their friends and family, but you know, just taking what he's saying, it sounds more like people should not get into business with people that they have not set out realistic expectations and clearly communicated with. Yeah, and then just ending off, also just giving us some insight into what he's reading at the moment, where he thinks, you know, I guess a little bit around where the crypto market is going, especially now that more high net worth individuals and institutions are becoming interested in the market. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. Thank you again, Sean.
The Business Buzz.
So with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Thank you so much to Sean for joining us and being our brand new heavy, the first of 2021, 35 years and below, celebrating a young person in South Africa doing the things. Once again, just that whole story of, you know, once upon a time saying that I want to be a rugby player, becoming a model, then managing money on behalf of his friends, and then starting in financial services and the world of finance, and then starting his own crypto firm. It is quite a fascinating story, we would definitely be keeping an eye to see where his journey takes him on to next. So that's been it. Remember that you can keep in touch with us. Let us know what you thought of our brand new heavy. Engage with us on Facebook. We have VFM or Voice of Vits. Our other Facebook page is Vits Radio Academy, and then on Twitter at VFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag business buzz. You can also stream us live on viafm.co.za. And remember that our podcasts are available on the major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, together with Google Podcasts and iono.fm. So with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kotlano Serame, together with our executive producer Glory Mabuza, and our producers Antando Klimba, together with Simbarashe Honde and Slindile Msibi. Don't miss the business by same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the VAU FM lineup. So for myself, Mdio Mob, Justice Kabaza, and the rest of the team, it is take care.
The Business Buzz Podcast.